Hello, students. This is Dora, and we have Karina back on our program. Hi, Karina.
Hi, Dora. Hi, everyone.
And this half an hour, I would love to talk to you about just the state of yoga in the universe and also Ayurveda, because they actually kind of go hand in hand, the conversation about it. Do you want to just quickly tell students about what Ayurveda is?
Ayurveda, you know, is really the Indian science of life. It's a lot of people know it for the food, the dietary component, and the herbs, but there's more to Ayurveda. It's also about lifestyle. It's about exercise, and it's about really living in harmony with the seasons and the land. And it is the sister science to yoga. They both come from the same root.
Yeah.
That's like in a nutshell. There's more, but I mean, I could talk for a while, but this is just in general.
And I know when we teach our trainings, the 200 and 500 hour trainings, we talk often about this idea that one of the proverbs, the most famous sentences in Ayurveda is like attracts like, but in order to have balance, we often need to reach into the opposite, right?
Yeah. This is the basis of Ayurvedic philosophy is like attracts like. Opposites balance, right? But opposites balance. And so when you have an imbalance, you want more of that, even though you don't realize that that's what you're doing. You're perpetuating the imbalance by doing more of the same thing, which is why the like attracts like. But then the opposite will balance you and it will give you exactly what you need. And then once you're balanced, you can do what you like. Right? But sometimes you kind of have to break through that inertia and try something different.
Yeah. I know we talked on and on and on about the current state of the universe. And we mentioned, you know, during many, many tea conversations about how yoga is changing. And one of the reasons it's changing is, it's getting huge in corporate. I'm not really sure if it can scale because you kind of pay for it. It turns into exercise and there is nothing wrong with exercise, but you lose much of the wisdom tradition and the breath as it becomes more and more popular. And also because our current world is geared towards the visual, you know, the Instagram and the poses, have taken over the message. When I teach the history of yoga and just history of general, I always challenge my students with this idea that the media is most of the message. And by that, I mean, when the media was just newspapers, the message was very much formulated and the possibility of the message by the written word, right? And then it's shifted to radio and it was the audio. And then it shifted to television and now it's on social media. And whatever message is trying to convey, it literally changes forms because of the media that delivers it. So now the major media that delivers yoga is social media and large corporations in more of a cookie cutter form, which by definition strips it from its more cognitive, more inward going, you know, tendencies. And like you said, Karina, the more this happens, like attracts like, and without knowing, people are more and more attracted to that, right? How do you combat that as I know a yoga teacher who is trying to swim against the stream?
Yeah, that's a good question. Not so easy to answer, but it really is about contemplation and really observing your habits. And, you know, because we all have habits, but they are a product of our environment and all that we take in through the senses. And sometimes you really have to shut down the senses so that you can really figure that out. And there's nothing wrong with yoga as exercise, as you said, you know, the workout, we all need to move our bodies. We've been sitting a lot, but even when you move in yoga, you want to draw your attention inward. You want to come back. You bring all the scattered portions of your mind back into the body, right? Because this is where you live. This is your body. This is the body is the mind's home base. And because of all the sensory stimulation, we don't come back home so that we can regroup, right? And it's, well, yes, we're here to live in the world, to engage with the world. But before we do that, we have to really be centered in ourselves. And yoga and Ayurveda help you to do that. And yes, there's a lot of yoga out there, which is very externally oriented. Yoga has become very externally oriented. Yeah. But there is a way to practice even the physical stuff and still be more inwardly oriented.
Yeah. And that's what we do at Spira. I make no excuses with the fact that I like to teach a very hard workout flow, but we have no mirrors in our studio. And I encourage students to stay with the breath and to basically look at the sometimes strenuous nature of the yoga as a way of how that kind of plays against the ego and what comes up and what is important in achieving or not achieving or backing off, right? It's still a conversation with our inner self. And I have had many conversations with students, and I had a couple of really nasty write-ups on feedback forums that we don't have mirrors. And there are some people who walk in and walk right out because there's no mirror. There is now a fitness app that's basically a big mirror and you're just hanging out in front of it and staring at yourself, which is brilliant because for some reason we have this incredibly narcissistic brain and we love staring at each other. I remember, you know, dating, and if there was a mirror in the restaurant, I used to hate it because I couldn't stop looking at it. And I think it's kind of the monkey mind that we all have of like, hey, there's a mirror, look at it. And we forget what happens inwardly because we get so caught up. And I know exactly the argument that, oh, the mirror is to make sure that your form is good and you're doing things properly. But actually, it is way more beneficial to train your brain to recognize your form without the feedback of the mirror, to sense it from within. Because when you're 90 years old and walking down the street, you don't have a mirror to make sure that you have the correct form and you know how to correct if you slip, right? So that is one of the benefits of training the brain and the mind to feel the physical world as well as the emotional world so much more just from internal sensations, right?
Yeah, I agree. And you said two really key points there. You know, one about the breath, and one about the mirror, because when you, yes, you can look in the mirror to see if your physical form is correct, but if you can't feel, because it's, everybody's different, and it's not just about structural physical form, it's really about how does it feel like, it's about energetic form, and it's about, do you feel stable, do you feel embodied, do you feel your legs and your support? And I think that the mirror, it's all about, does it look nice or does it not look nice? But, you know, and it's really, it should be about, do I feel centered, stable? Do I feel strong? And you can only do that if you feel correct alignment. And correct alignment is not something that is, like you said, cookie cutter, everybody has the exact same alignment. There's no such thing as the ideal pose that fits everybody. And that, but this whole Instagram culture fosters that. Oh yeah, let's see if you can do the same thing that I'm doing. And but it's, we're all different. And yoga is about, you know, union, but it's about union in diversity, right? It's this celebrating diversity and that we're all unique. And so everybody's practice is going to be different. And then to go back to the second point that you said, you know, the breath and how the breath is what we encourage people to connect to at Sphera. The breath is what's real to us. And it has this component that connects you to the outer world, but it also has this component that it brings you in. So it connects the two, external world and internal world. And the breath has a physical component, but it also has this energetic component, which is prana. And prana is the link between yoga and Ayurveda, to go back to our Ayurveda thought. And so prana is what animates the world and animates our body. It's energy, right? Prana is energy. And so the breath is, and prana are the link. Right, the link between the two, and what brings the mind back to the body. We can't, it's really hard to do it if you don't use your breath.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like we actually got in our culture two completely different things mixed up, because if you come from ballet, you have the mirror, right? And the whole idea of mirror in a studio started with ballet, it got handed down to aerobics, and then now it's in bar and yoga, right? But the idea of ballet and having a mirror, because I took ballet as a child as well, is that you're training people for a performance. You're not training people to be healthy in the alignment. As a matter of fact, I think you could make a very good case about how ballet is very kind of difficult on your joints, right? But your goal is to have a performance where it looks to the observer a certain way, which is an exact opposition to the idea of yoga, which is why yoga originally had no mirrors, right? Which is the internal world. And once you bring that, once you recognize that this mixed up happened, and now we're trying to wrap something into, you know, these two art forms are merging, except that I believe that the performance art side of things is cannibalizing yoga. And all that's left at this point is the poses, right? I can do this pose, I can do the splits. The first thing you hear about people who are trying to do yoga, oh, I can't touch my toes. Or do you want to do an arm balance? Do you want to do a handstand? And we teach all of that, right, Karina? We're actually quite good at teaching advanced poses, but we don't teach the poses for the sake of the poses. And we don't stroke people's ego for that. And also, like you said, I've reviewed the poses with physical therapists, and sometimes the healthy alignment looks one way in one body and a completely different way in another body. So now if you put a mirror in front of the people and say, you have to do this pose, they try to do a monkey do, monkey say, kind of, I do what you do, and they both get injured, versus going inward and allowing the teacher who has knowledge in actually sensing what's possible within a body to make the right amount of correction, instead of the mirror doing this one size fits all thing. So we're fighting against the stream of that. And honestly, as a business owner, I kind of feel like I wanted to talk about this topic and then bring it back to how Ayurveda could help us, because yoga businesses that are trying to stay true to actually teaching body wisdom tradition while also teaching strengthening, we're having a tough time. And we're having a tougher and tougher time during COVID, when I feel like people they have every right to feel that way, but they just don't want to go internally. It's too difficult. There's too much emotional stuff happening inside. So folks are wanting to do the quick workouts, you know, let me just get out of my head kind of thing, which is a tough thing, because I believe in a good workout myself, but I think you cannot clean out your room by running away. You got to go into your room and clean it out, you know, and it's uncomfortable and nobody likes to do it. But once you do it, you sit down and you're like, hey, Fabrice, this is wonderful, right? But you've got to go through the discomfort. And that's exactly Ayurveda, right? So we're asking the public, we're asking our students in some ways at a time when maybe financially and maybe because everything is on computer, it's the hardest request to do, which is to turn on to Spira, turn on to doing yoga in a way that may be emotionally uncomfortable, but will be both physically and emotionally more rewarding down the line. So Karina, help our students understand how to do yoga and how to do Ayurvedic oriented yoga, and maybe what is it that they can expect to feel, but what tools, can you give them like one or two tools that would help to A, explain, and also just kind of rise above the difficulty that this requires?
Yes, again, it goes back to the breath. And when you're a practice that you're struggling with, it's about kindness also, being kind to yourself and breathing. And really being honest, is this, I don't want to feel it. Am I resisting this because I don't like it, because it's pushing my buttons? Am I comparing myself to other people? What is it that's going on? And just really about contemplation. It's yoga is a self-inquiry practice. And so asking yourself these questions is healthy. That's what the poses are teaching you, something about yourself. Where are you resisting? And then instead of running away from the resistance, can you observe it from the seat of the observer and then breathe and see how that affects you? Rather than the original, listen to your body thing, that is a cue that's overused and misused, because the first thing that your body is going to say is the opposite, usually what you need, unless you're really well trained to have the eyes and see what I'm, talking about. So it's simple, but simple doesn't mean easy, necessarily simplistic. And that's the challenge, is to just stick with it, even if you don't want to do it, and be kind to yourself. Know when you're pushing yourself too hard, and having the courage to back off, and knowing when you're just being lethargic or lazy and just pushing yourself. And the key to knowing when is by breathing. So when you're breathing, watch the breath. As you move through the poses, through the vinyasa, watch the breath. If your breath is shaky, if there's any jerkiness, even subtle, sometimes it's subtle, that means you're probably overdoing it. Right? If you're out of breath, you're probably overdoing it. If you can't keep up, then, and you're trying to go as fast as whoever's teaching or other people, then where's your breath? Can you follow a natural rhythm that you can keep up with, that your breath is smooth and calm? And can you really come back to your gut feeling, really breathe in your belly? And then the breath actually will tell you what to do. If you connect to breath, and you cultivate the qualities of healthy breathing, and you will know what to do. Then the body starts to work the way it's supposed to.
Yeah. I always, a lot of students, I call it runaway, I don't want to deal with this right now, or this is too difficult, or it's A, too difficult physically. Oh, it's too difficult emotionally. It's not what I want, because it's not entertaining enough, because often we don't play music. Often we talk about the breath, right? And another thing that happened in the yoga culture is that it turned from a difficult internal inquiry where you're having to do some, feelings inside, into an entertainment form. Can I have soothing lights? Can I have a good music to, take your mind off of things? So to perk your spirits up. So we're kind of clinging to external stimuli to get the work done that we should be able to do internally for ourselves. And I have that feedback often of like, I prefer this with my class. It goes back to this idea that, I am really sorry. I am here to hold space for you and teach you yoga. I am not here to provide a service of entertainment. And I think that sounds horribly harsh, I know. And especially in this world where we do need to make a living, and at some people would make the claim that, look, you are a service provider, because yes, we are. But in order for yoga to stay yoga, we have to be able to teach, which means that we have to be able to ask our students to occasionally hold the space that's more difficult, right? And that's really what Ayurveda is teaching as well, is like you're examining and holding this space that's more difficult, even when it comes to food, right?
So, yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that, of how that reflects in our food choices?
Yeah. For example, there are three major doshas, which are the three body constitutions, right? The vata, which is more people that are more in their minds, usually more creative people. There's pitta, which is more fire. So vata is more air element, air and space. And then pitta is more fiery. And then there's kapha, which is more down to earth, more grounding, right? And so sometimes kapha people, if you're balanced, it's great. But if you're a kapha person and you're too much of a couch potato right now, and all I want to do is restorative yoga, that means you do need to move. You are the one who needs the vinyasa, right? And so, but you're going to not want to take the vinyasa. You just want to take the yin yoga or the restorative, right? And then pitta people, they want to do hot yoga and they just want to do hot yoga. And so they want more fire. And in terms of food, what do they want? They want to eat spicy foods, which they're already full of fire, but they want more fire. The kapha people, they're lethargic. They want to eat all the sugar, the stuff that's going to slow them down, which they need something lighter, right? And then the vata people, too airy, And so they're the ones who need the grounding. They're the ones who need to eat the heavy meals to ground them, because they're right? Spacey. And so you see, you want more of the same. You're spacey. You're going to want foods that make you spacey. So you're going to drink tons of kombucha full of bubbles. Drink a whole bottle of kombucha, which no one should ever drink. Like, they're so good, right? They're so good for you, but in small doses, and people drink the whole bottle. And if you're a vata, you're going to be deranged, right? Because it's too much air. You already are airy. So you're going to add more. So you see what I'm saying? You're pitta. You're only going to eat spicy foods. It's no problem liking spicy foods, but you have to balance that with something that calms down, that pacifies that fire. And so You see where we're getting, and so that applies to food, that applies to your choices. Recreation, it applies to yoga, it applies to your whole life.
Yeah. And it's interesting, because there's nothing wrong with playing the right kind of music also to drive a yoga class. The problem is that when it becomes an anchor and people need it, then it often is, because the first thing they will say is like, oh, I don't know what to do with my head when it's just too silent. It's just uncomfortable, right? Well, I would challenge them to turn the music down and to be with that for a little bit. And then they can enjoy music when it's appropriate in moderation, right? But not in order to never, ever to be in silence with your own head. And that's really the art of yoga. The art of yoga teaches a lifestyle that's values driven, that how do I become ahimsa, nonviolent? How do I tell the truth? How do I build tapas, discipline? How do I hold myself to see the clarity and in balance? And how do I not covet and so forth? I mean, it's very much anchored in the value system and balanced out by Ayurveda, which is asking your senses to be balanced, but you can only balance your senses if you reach back to the eight limbs, to your value system, right? Because you will need a little bit of discipline to stick with it. It's not going to be fun right away. And that's really, I think I just said the word that is a good closure here, is the problem is that we as more traditional yoga teachers, I believe we can offer a way to balance the universe and help people through difficult times, but we live in an addictive world. It's the fun, it's, can you design an app and sell a lot of it right away? Can you design a fitness program that is super popular right away? Where, how do you create something super popular right away? You gotta make it a little bit addictive, right? You gotta figure out how to psychologically hook people enough that they will want to do more and more and more and share it. And we live in this world that if I can't get your attention in 5 seconds flat, I lost, right? So now imagine, please listener, Karina and I trying to make a living by spreading this idea and this teaching that I would like you to stay, though I challenge you with discomfort. I would like you to keep listening and please come back 5 more times, even if you don't like it. And can you please stay curious so I can teach you something on my 10th lecture to you, that the light bulb goes off and you realize that there is a way you can balance your life. We are all addicted. I'm not saying, you know, that you are better than I am. I am an addictive person. Our brain is set up in an addictive way. And yoga has been designed many millennia ago, exactly because even in ancient times, human beings are human beings. We have way more in common that divides us. And one thing we have in common is we all have this very addictive brain. You know, we want the sugars, we want the quick fixes, we want to feel good. Except that before, you know, when we were hunter-gatherers, there was really the addictive brain served us to find the honey, to remember where the good berries were, and to keep good friendships, right? But right now, this addictive brain, because we have so many resources, is the very thing that's destroying us. Originally, during paleo times, it was the thing that sustained us because it helped us remember where the good stuff was. But now there's so much good stuff that it's literally poisoning us. And yoga was designed along with Ayurveda to balance that out. But it cannot stay yoga and it cannot stay Ayurveda if it turns into something that entertains you, or it's something that you want more of, or it's something where you must be able to do that pose in the newest legging. You know, it's just, yeah. It's like exactly the opposite of what we're trying to do here. And all of those things is nothing wrong with moderation. I know that you really enjoy learning some of the arm balances, and so do I. And it's just, how do you do it without an addictive attitude? How do you do it so that your whole self-worth is not reflected on what it is that you can do, but rather how you live your life day to day in the universe?
Yep. It's totally in that. That's it. And I think that it's just remembering that even if you feel uncomfortable in class, if your class is balanced at the end, afterwards, you will have the sign that the practice is working for you, regardless of how you feel during the practices, how you feel after. Because sometimes you get the major workout, but it's more externally oriented. And then you leave the practice more scattered than when you started the practice, or you have a crash an hour later. And that's an indication that the practice is not working for you, right? But if the practice, you know, challenges you and you're like, oh my gosh, and then you think that, oh, I'm struggling today. But if you just allow it to be what it is, and you just have compassion for yourself and for the practice, and just stay with it and from a place of the witness, often you'd be surprised that by the time you get to Shavasana later, you have good energy, which is clean. It's not jittery. It's you're energized, but you're also grounded and centered. And I think that that's what we provide.
Yeah. And I started looking at my practice as my daily meditation, also to center me in this universe where it's so easy, especially during COVID, to be caught up in anxiety. You know, it's so easy to be caught up in the idea of scarcity. Do I have enough to keep going? Will I have a job? And so forth, you know? And it's easy to also be caught up in this world of, am I socially acceptable with the things that I think? Do I fit in? Do I don't fit in? Do I need certain material possessions in order to fit in? And we have lost the dialogue on centering ourselves back to the values that make our society great. And for me, and you can call this religious, I don't care. I think religion has this place in society where it's healthy. But yoga is that practice for me where I can go to my mat and remind myself what's important. It's reminding myself that what's important is my commitment to my work, my commitment to my family, my friends, my commitment to do a good job, even if I don't know if I'm going to get paid tomorrow, which is during COVID 100% true. But we keep showing up even though we don't know. And that's really what yoga can teach, is to stay through the hard times, to know that it's all just temporary anyway, right? And not demand an outcome right away, not demand to feel a certain way afterwards, to just simply stay an observer and remind myself, just keep doing what you believe in, do good job, do hard work, be kind to yourself, be kind to everyone else, stay the course, and everything will work out just fine.
Yes, definitely.
So I think that's where I want to leave it, Karina. Thank you so much for all of that. And for the listener, if you're brand new to listening to Spira Radio, you can find more classes at spirapoweryoga.com. And Karina teaches lots of Ayurveda classes and pranayama classes. But you know, in our daily practice, if you just look at our classes, you'll find so much. So if you're curious, definitely give it a try. And don't expect it to be right away working or to be good at it. You know, it's just joy to show up every day. So thanks, Karina.
Thank you, Dora. Thank you, everyone.
Namaste.
Namaste.